approach to psychotherapy is that the goal is to help an individual or even couples achieve a state of balance in terms of a more conscious awareness between what's going on in their mind, emotionally, physically, as well as spiritually. So, if you've listened to this show in the past, you know that we do all sorts of topics, and tonight's topic has to do with bisexuality. And we're going to talk a lot tonight about the implications in the life of an individual who's bisexual and the impact it may have on their relationships. And a little bit later, I'll be introducing my guest, Greg Carlson, who's a psychotherapist who specializes in working with bisexuals, among other things. So I'm going to start, actually, by reading a definition of bisexuality, which I actually got from the Bisexual Resource Center, their website. And bisexuality is the potential to feel sexually attracted to and to engage in sensual or sexual relationships with people of either sex. A bisexual person may not be equally attracted to both sexes, and the degree of attraction may vary over time. Self-perception is the key to a bisexual identity. Many people engage in sexual activity with people of both sexes, yet do not identify as bisexual. Likewise, other people engage in sexual relations only with people of one sex, or do not engage in sexual activity at all, yet consider themselves bisexual. There is no behavioral test to determine whether or not one is bisexual. So it's basically a self-perception, self-identification. Now, there are a lot of people who, well, especially a lot of gay people that I know, who feel like someone who says that they're bisexual, they're just really lesbian or gay and just repressed and in denial and not dealing with it yet. And there are heterosexuals that I know who hear about people who are bisexual who think that they're sick, and as sick as they may be, as they may consider someone who's gay or lesbian. And the bisexuals kind of, for some people who are bisexual, they're kind of stuck in this meta world, you know, not necessarily gay, not necessarily heterosexual, and not necessarily accepted in either group. So very often there is a real sense of fear and secrecy, very much like, you know, a gay or lesbian might feel in terms of self-acceptance and coming out of the closet. The stresses that this leads to, I think, for some people might see that as we discuss this tonight, there are some very special or stressors and concerns that a bisexual may have that's specific to bisexuality. So, as we discuss this evening, I'm going to be talking about a lot of the men that I may counsel who go to sex clubs or bathhouses, and when I'm at some of these venues doing some counseling, very often they may come in and say, you know what, I'm married and I'm here having sex with men, and I enjoy this, and I still enjoy having sex with my wife, and it's very hard for me to stop doing this, and something still pulls me back here, but I am afraid. I'm afraid of my wife finding out, what it would do to my family. There are all of these things, and to some people, bisexuality is something that may keep them from even committing to a relationship because of the fear of what the person may think of them. Now, of course, there are other people who are bisexual, and many that I know that find it very life-enhancing and feel that it's an aspect of who they are that allows for them a greater experience and understanding of differences among people and the ability to be intimate in ways that other people can't because of the sense of freedom that comes with the ability to love and make love to either gender. So obviously, I've just put on the table here a whole myriad of issues for discussion. So actually, I'd like to get right into introducing my guest tonight, because he's the one that may have some of the answers here. And his name is Greg Carlson, and he's a licensed marriage and family therapist, and he works here in the Los Angeles area. And while he was in graduate school, he began researching, developing, and implementing programs focusing on bisexuality, which is an area in the psychological community that is rarely discussed, according to his bio. Besides having his graduate paper on bisexuality published, Greg's workshop on bisexuality has been implemented in high schools, believe it or not, colleges, graduate schools, seminaries, and at professional psychological conferences throughout California and elsewhere. Greg, welcome to the show again.
Thank you.
Yeah. So you heard me talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly, so to speak. What are some of your reactions to some of the things that I said? Did I define bisexuality as you would like it defined at this point?
You did. You did, and I think the resource guide is a great resource for people that are looking for bisexual resources throughout the United States and beyond. I think one of the key components of identifying or that definition of bisexuality is the potential.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because we come from a dichotic society that sees things black, white, right or wrong, gay or straight, it is very difficult for people to accept this concept of not either or, but both.
Mm-hmm.
And what does that mean for people? So that potential, I think, is very important. And the other piece that you said that I think is key when we talk about bisexuality is it's a self-identification.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't work for me to tell someone that they are bisexual if that's not the way they identify it.
Right.
People, I think, in our country really want to put people in boxes.
Mm-hmm.
And when they can't, it's very disconcerting for some people. So I think also when I talk to people, I let them know that they still have choices. We all know gay men and women that are married to the opposite sex because they want something. Maybe they want a family.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they want heterosexual privilege. Maybe it's a religious value. And I've seen this as well as you have, that sometimes when this happens, the men end up acting out anonymously because there's no other place to act out those feelings for the same gender or the opposite gender, depending on their relationship. But I think with bisexuality, we're not just talking about the behavior, but there are many aspects to our sexuality. Behavior is one of them. Attraction is another. As I said, we can be attracted to one person and married to another. Maybe we're attracted to the same gender, but we're married to the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
So I think all these issues that people have end up causing angst within themselves, because with bisexuality, they can feel very alone and very isolated. Any minority can feel that at any level.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for the bisexual community, within the sexual minority community at large, it's more difficult, because bisexuality tends to be at times identified by the person you're with, not who you are. And what I mean by that is, if I'm pushing my little girl on a swing set, people will assume that I'm heterosexual. If I'm seen with a man sipping coffee at a cafe in a predominantly gay area, they're going to assume that I'm gay. And I may be bisexual in both those cases.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times bisexual people may be with their gay friends, and when they make a statement that they're bisexual, they'll be told, oh, you just haven't found out who you are yet, or you just haven't figured it out yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so that can be very hurtful to people that don't understand that their friend may be bisexual, and so people tend to not get or may not get the support they need out of the gay community, and they may not get it out of the straight community, because their concept of bisexuality or sexuality, anything other than heterosexuality, is gay. If you've had sex with the same gender, then you're gay. And so it puts bisexual people in a very, very strange place, in a very alone place. Something that I've seen is that we can kind of look at bisexuality in that own self-identifying process, as we look at individuals, happening maybe a little later than gay or lesbian identification, I think part of that might be because of our society. Our society says you need to identify as either gay or straight. And so we have people maybe in their late 20s, 30s, 40s that have led either a heterosexual lifestyle or a gay lifestyle, all of a sudden attracted to the same or opposite gender, depending on their relationship. And it's very scary for them. And so I kind of look at, in my own mind, when I'm working with people at four different areas. Maybe a transitional bisexuality, that it is a stage of coming through and eventually identifying, let's say, as gay. A historical bisexuality, looking at maybe in the past they were attracted and acting with both genders, men and women. Or a sequential. You might have someone that is in a relationship with a man and stays in that relationship and is monogamous. And then after they get out of that relationship, they may be with a woman and they're monogamous. You know, monogamy is a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Whether we're heterosexual, gay, or bisexual, we do have choices whether we're going to be monogamous with our partner or we're not. And so I think a lot of times our society will assume, because someone is bisexual, that they're not monogamous, and that's not the same thing. And so I think our listeners need to be clear about that, because that may be ringing true with them. The minute they say they're bisexual, people say, oh, you must be cheating.
Mm-hmm.
That may not be true.
We're going to take a break here and get to that fourth one as soon as we come back. So I'm going to ask my listeners to stay tuned. And when we come back, I'll give you the phone number in case you'd like to join us in this conversation or ask some questions. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler, and tonight we're discussing bisexuality, and my guest tonight is actually an old friend, and he's been on the show actually about a year ago, I think, Greg. His name is Greg Carlson, a licensed marriage and family therapist and an expert of sorts in the issue of bisexuality. Greg, you were talking about the four types of bisexuality. You talked about transitional, historical, sequential. And in the sequential one, you talked about the issue of commitment and monogamy, where somebody may be bisexual, but in a committed monogamous relationship, maybe with the same sex, and then if that should break up, then maybe the next one may be with the opposite sex, but still a monogamous committed relationship.
Right.
And I think you made a good point that a lot of people assume that because someone's bisexual, they don't commit, they don't know how to commit. It's a way of avoiding intimacy and commitment, and they're constantly on the prowl, so to speak, because never quite satisfied with one and needing to fill the void with the other.
How much
do you find that in the counseling that you do?
Right, and I think it also depends on where that person is in their own kind of life cycle, where they are in their life.
Mm-hmm.
Someone in their 70s may be reacting to bisexuality different than someone in their 20s or 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to look at that too. But I think the fourth type that we can look at also is congruent. So that would be, concurrent.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be at the same time. So people that date both men and women at the same time, we might look at that as concurrent.
Or it may even be in a three-way relationship.
Right. It might be a polyamorous relationship where there's or a polyfidelitous relationship where there's fidelity, but it's within the group.
Mm-hmm.
You may have someone that has a primary relationship and have a third party, or three people living in a relationship. Something that I've seen in regards to people identifying as bisexual is that men, even though they may be in a relationship with a woman, tend to continue to identify as bisexual. Whereas women that are in same-gender relationships eventually, many times, not all the time, will identify as lesbian.
Mm-hmm.
And I've spoken to a fair amount of lesbians that will say privately, actually I'm bisexual, but it's just not worth it for me to get into it with my partner. And there's a real fear about losing their community.
I was just going to say, within the lesbian community, would you say that there's more of a sense of politicizing the identification and the sense of belonging, and that they might encounter more argument about their identifying?
Right, right. And I think if they have identified as lesbian first and then find out or realize with their own sexual development, their sexual orientation development, that maybe in a part of their life that they're attracted to men, it's really difficult and hard to decide that they're going to say anything, because they may not be well received by their friends or by their partners.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen that and heard that from lesbian friends and clients that I've had.
Right. Before we go any further, I promised listeners that I would make sure they got the phone numbers in case they want to call
sure.
in and join us in this. And so if you are in the Phoenix area, you have a local number, which is 480-874-1311. 480-874-1311. And if you're one of our listeners listening via the Internet, the toll-free line from anywhere in the U.S. Is 1-888-437-7660. So feel free to call in with your comments, questions, or maybe a little bit about your own personal experience that you'd like to share in terms of your own growth and development or lack of around these issues.
Right.
You mentioned also about the 70-year-old that's just dealing with this. I think that was a very powerful and important statement, because I think a lot of people don't think in terms of someone reaching their 70s or 80s, and maybe even younger people find it hard to believe someone in their 60s might still have a sexuality or desire or even a sex life.
But, oh, yes.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, yes.
And it's interesting, because at one of the bathhouses that I do the counseling at, it tends to have often, especially during the day, an older clientele, and I'm talking about 60s and 70s,
mm-hmm.
Very generally.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember about a year or so ago, maybe even longer, there was this Latino guy who was about 72, 73 years old, and saw my sign up for counseling and came in and started talking.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been married for over 50 years, has a daughter who's around 30, and finally explored his desire for men at age 65.
Wow.
And explained to me that back when he was a kid and had these feelings in his Latino culture in Mexico, you just didn't explore it. You just got married, and he never even touched another guy till he was 65.
Mm-hmm.
So clearly this is someone who is dealing for the first time. In fact, it turns out I was the very first person ever in his life that he had this conversation with.
Wow.
And verbalized.
Wow.
The fact that he was married, attracted to men, and sexually active.
Right.
And it was, you could just see the weight lifting off of him. In fact, he came back the next day and said he had never slept better in his entire life as he had tonight.
Right. And I think that speaks to the secrecy of this whole issue, that people feel so much shame because there's not many areas or places that they can come to and talk about this issue with anybody and feel that they usually feel like they're going to be condemned or judged
right.
by it. And we're also seeing and finding that for some people, their sexual orientation does change
mm-hmm.
through the years. You can have someone that's been in a marriage for 30, 40 years, and maybe they become widowed or become a widower, and all of a sudden they do find themselves attracted to the same gender. And so that does happen, and I have seen that happen. So it's mm-hmm. not necessarily someone that's been hiding it for 30, 40 years. We do know, as we study sexuality, that for some people, their orientation is more fluid than with others.
Mm-hmm.
So, but well, I think...
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
As we look at relationships, you know, moving into a relationship with someone, whether you're the person that is bisexual or you're moving into a relationship with someone that is bisexual, there's obviously so many issues that come up with that couple and their communication. And I think, obviously, if you go into a relationship and you're both bisexual, you come up with some guidelines for your own own relationship and what that's going to mean. If you get into a relationship and find out after the relationship begins that someone's bisexual, then obviously the dynamics are going to be different. It also depends on how long you've been in a relationship. So one of my, I run a bisexual men's group in Pasadena, and one of my men had been married for 40 years and had just started in the last 3 years kind of experimenting with same gender relationships, and actually told his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And the marriage is working through it.
Mm-hmm.
They're coming up with their own guidelines and of what that means for their relationship. And they decided that with their family and their children and everything they have together, and because they're best friends, they were going to work through this versus splitting up.
Well, that speaks to the title of my show, Tell the Truth Faster. Now, what happens, I mean, you know, you've seen it, I've seen it, when there is this person living in fear of these feelings and they're doing all this stuff in secrecy,
right.
What it does is it distances themselves from the people that they may love the most, because they're afraid of the sense of rejection, abandonment, judgment, and everything else. And it may not just be the spouse, it may be the kids that they're afraid of dealing with.
Well, and there's so much grief involved,
mm-hmm.
and so much, there can be a lot of depression, but there's such a feeling of aloneness, just being by themselves, you know, coming home from the bathhouse or coming home from wherever and just sitting in that car crying, thinking, you know, God, what have I done?
Mm-hmm.
Or how am I going to fit this into my life?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's where you and I see them, where they're just really distraught.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, with your gentleman that you talked about, for some of them, they've never told anybody. And
right.
to just be able to get it off their chest and say, my gosh, this is what I'm dealing with, mm-hmm. is a huge relief. And
well,
I think...
The other thing that comes... Excuse me,
mm-hmm.
I didn't mean to interrupt
no.
you. But the other thing that is impacting them, too, is that... The way they might be found out would be they slip up or being caught, being arrested in a park, ending up getting an STD or even HIV,
right.
and, you know, the biggest terror is what happens if I bring something home to my wife,
right.
you know, something like that. And
yeah.
yet they still can't come clean, no pun intended there, with the information, and yet at the same time, how do you tell your wife that we need to start using condoms after you
exactly.
haven't had yours?
Exactly, because obviously if you make that statement, you've been doing something.
Right.
And
you
it's
know.
True.
Mm-hmm.
And many of them, the men that you see and I see, they don't tell their wives.
Right.
And they go on having unprotected sex. And so what I tell spouses, if you think or even have an inkling that something is going on, you need to protect yourself.
Right.
To the women out there that think their husbands may be bisexual and they're not coming clean with what they're doing and their behavior, then they really need to protect themselves.
Right. I have a client who's a woman who's 64 and she's diagnosed with AIDS. And as we've been working together, it's become increasingly clear to her that her husband, who passed away a number of years ago from AIDS, who kept the whole thing a secret. He wouldn't even tell his kids that he was dying of AIDS.
Right.
And they were her stepkids, for the most part. And, you know, he, till the day he died, he told her it was from a prostitute that he was seeing. I mean,
right.
the lie was so intense, but as
right.
she started, you know, piecing together the puzzle, it became increasingly clearer that he had the secret bisexual life going on that impacted her in the most severe way. So
right.
she, at 64, is, again, a minority within a minority, which
right.
is, you know, one of the senior citizens and a woman who is an
yeah.
AIDS diagnosis.
Yeah, and I don't, you know, as I spoke earlier about, it's a choice, and just because you're bisexual doesn't mean you can't be monogamous. I think what we find is that the people that are not able to share it, talk about it, discuss it, are those that become very isolated, and a lot of times are the ones that are going and acting out anonymously.
And self-destructively, and we're going to talk about that after we take a short break here again. So this is Stuart Ultra and my guest tonight, Greg Carlson. We'll be right back discussing more about bisexuality, so stay tuned. marriage and family therapist from Los Angeles, and someone very involved with research and treatment with people who are bisexual. Before the break, we were actually getting into the problems and the dynamics of the secrecy and the fear that people live in, and the repercussions that it may have. You know, how does someone deal with the shame and the secrecy? And very often we were talking before the break about the issues of self-sabotage. In other words, people live with something long enough and they really want to be found out, but they don't have the courage to put it into words and tell the truth faster. So they end up getting arrested or a disease or attempt suicide and all this other stuff that comes with repressing something very profound about themselves. What do you find with your clients or within your circles around this type of self-sabotaging behavior?
Well, you know, I think in regards to the guilt, as you said, I think there's a lot of guilt involved because they don't feel they can tell anybody. And I would just want to say, first of all, someone has to admit within themselves that they're bisexual if they're dealing with this. It's not based on a culture or family of origin or religion or society. If you know that you're attracted to both genders, that's a given. And I would first say, accept that within yourself. And then look at how that's going to either fit into your system or not fit into your system. I think we need to ask ourselves, you know, does this fit into our present situation?
Mm-hmm.
And if it does, how is it going to? Are we going to tell our partner? Are we not going to tell our partner? And how does that play out? And get help. Get support.
That's the important thing. I mean, that to me is essential. Don't sit with it alone. You know, that's why you run groups on this, and this is why there are workshops. And, you know, hopefully somebody out there listening to us right now, and before the end of the show, we'll tell them, you know, what websites or maybe
right.
organizations they can get to.
Definitely.
To get that kind of support where they won't be judged and they can start working through some of these issues.
Right. I think what's really positive about the bisexual community now, and because of the internet, there are bisexual groups. If you pull up on your internet, binet.org, you can find a lot of bisexual support groups for people in your area. Some of them are gender specific, so they're maybe just for women, or they're just for men, or they're a co-gender group that are for both men and women. But I think in regards to our society and politically, the bisexual community helping others become more aware, it's on the rise, and we're doing more work in that area to help more people become aware of bisexuality.
Mm-hmm. There's another issue that I alluded to earlier,
mm-hmm.
That I think needs to be discussed. Recently, I actually met two men, and when they found out that I was gay, you know, started talking to me about issues that they had with their own fathers. And in both cases, it turns out that as adults, they found out that their dads were bisexual,
mm-hmm.
and actually having sex outside the relationship
mm-hmm.
with their mother, you know, with their mother,
mm-hmm.
outside the relationship they were having with their mother.
Mm-hmm.
And in one case, the father actually passed away from complications of AIDS.
Wow.
And HIV. So this is what I was getting to in terms of how people are found out sometimes because of you know, I mean, and this guy, you know, I mean, God bless him, and he was really talking so genuinely to me about
mm.
this, and still in such pain, and I think a lot of anger, partially, not just about the lying, but also about the risk that his father had potentially put his mother in.
Right,
you know, and
right.
Like, so hard to get past that and to move into a space of understanding and forgiveness, and like with my client who's 64, it's like, you know, God bless her for being able to forgive her husband who, you know, she's writing a book about her experience with
wow.
this, and the whole thing is about the journey to forgiveness for her. But
yeah.
it's such a difficult thing to do when you love your mother and you find this sense of betrayal because of the lies, and then, you know, having to sit by his bedside watching him die from AIDS and yet still dealing with the rage and hurt and confusion
right.
that it brings up for the kids.
Right, right. And so I think what we see is this affects not just the person that's hurting. but it affects all the people around you.
Right.
And it affects the next generation and the future generations of your family. And so when you look at, take a genogram or you look at the different generations, you can see that this secret can have a huge effect, like a pebble, you know, in the water.
Mm-hmm.
The ripple effect is just phenomenal and very, very deep. And so, again, it speaks back to we need people to be able to find support and be able to talk about this and decide what they're going to do with it in their lives and not keep it a secret so it doesn't have a negative impact on the next generation and our kids and our partners. Because I think what we see is that when it's not worked through, it's that big secret that no one wants to talk about,
right,
that doesn't get discussed, and nobody ends up, I don't think, nobody in that situation ends up dealing with it in a healthy way then. I mean,
right.
I know that's a huge statement to make, but when we don't discuss it and we're doing or engaged in behavior that we don't even feel ourselves as safe, then it's not really helping us deal with this issue of who we really are.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't, who we are doesn't have to be a negative thing.
Right.
And I think when we find out who we are and we embrace that, we can then say, okay, this is who I am, whether it's being gay or straight or bisexual, and saying, this is who I am. Okay, it may be difficult in the situation I'm in right now, but how do I make it fit into the situation I'm in? Or how do I change the situation so it fits who I am,
mm-hmm,
specifically, so I can feel better about myself?
Right. But there are a lot of people, and especially, I mean, it's like one of the other groups that I see regularly deal with this within the context of the bathhouse is the cultural issues that, say, Latino,
yes,
men may have. And in that case, very often, it's younger Latino guys that are dealing with this bisexual attraction. They have girlfriends or they have wives or they've been fathering kids within the context of a marriage or a relationship or not, but there also is this real genuine attraction to other men that they're dealing with.
Right.
And in the Latino culture, that's certainly not something that's easily discussed.
No, and yeah. I found in the African American culture too,
mm-hmm,
there are specific cultural values that are just passed down from generation to generation. And I found with the Latino culture, I found that if a man, or even in Latino films to look at, the gay person is always effeminate. He's the, you know, the person cutting hair or working, mm-hmm, in the beauty parlor or the one being made fun of.
Mm-hmm.
And so Latino men that I work with really grow up with that understanding that if you're effeminate and you're gay, then, or if you're that specific type of person, then you're considered gay. If you're machismo,
mm-hmm,
and you're acting out with a guy, you're married, you're not considered gay.
Right.
I mean, this is being able to make it okay in your own head. And so the men that I see that are maybe the machismo guys, it's very difficult to take,
yeah,
that cultural value, mm-hmm, and the Catholicism, which is woven into that,
mm-hmm,
and say that, no, I'm not gay.
Mm-hmm.
But then, as you said earlier, what happens is they end up getting arrested.
Right.
And it really comes out. And then they're forced to deal with it, and it either ends their marriages. There's so much shame involved, and then you've got a very depressed or even suicidal client. I mean, that's
right,
the kind of stuff that we end up seeing when people don't deal with these issues.
Or drug and alcohol issues, because they're trying to numb the whole thing or use the drugs or alcohol as their excuse for being able to go act out with
right,
the same sex. Or that need to prove their manhood so much because they're so reactionary to the feelings inside that there's a lot of violence and acting out in that sense.
Right. And again, I think those of us that are out there listening right now, I mean, think about it. When you go home and you're really upset at work or you're really upset with yourself, what do you take it out on? You take it out on your kids or your wife, possibly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happens. And if you're in a culture where it's a very male-dominated culture, the women or the kids are just going to kind of acquiesce or back up and not like the behavior, but they're not going to say anything. And it,
mm-hmm,
and it just adds a lot of resentment where there doesn't have to be.
Mm-hmm.
In the black community, I've seen there's a real a rise within HIV within the black community and the younger black community, because, again, I don't think that we're acknowledging or accepting sexual minority groups within the African-American community. And so it's kind of like just don't ask, don't tell. And we find that there's more and more black women then that are getting affected with AIDS
mm-hmm.
because they're not checking with their partners or their husbands or their boyfriends. Again, it goes back to, you know, if he doesn't wear a condom, then he must not be doing anything.
Right.
Because if he was doing something, he would certainly say something. And the man's not going to say anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's this huge denial which continues to take place. And as you said earlier, like with your client that you have that's writing the book, they end up getting infected.
Right. And I know we're speaking in terms of the African-American and Latino community, but this is true. You know, the male pride and the male ego, whether it's Caucasian or Asian or whatever,
exactly.
You know, this is across the board, which, you know, causes a great deal of repression.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, it's important that those that are listening that are struggling with this realize that, yes, you know, there are people outside you that you may be, you know, hurting in this process, but ultimately you're hurting yourself the most by keeping the secret and not reaching out for help and not coming to terms, you know, with what behaviors you have experienced and what feelings are going on inside you.
Right, right. I think, you know, if someone's listening to the show right now, I think the very first thing would be to find a support group in your area or find someone that you know works in this area and just talk to them. Just spend some time talking about your experience, how difficult it is, how alone you feel, and just get it out there, because if you stay isolated and you don't make that first step, it stays a secret.
Mm-hmm.
And we end up acting on it in ways that may not be as healthy as we could deal with it. And so I think that first step is to confide in someone that you can trust. I had one gentleman drive around my office for 3 or 4 hours just not wanting to come in, not wanting to address it. And so that first step, I think, just be identifying it with somebody else. And then the second step, which is really hard, maybe meeting with that person or meeting with a group of people. You know, there's always this fear when you're dealing with something like this that someone's going to see you that knows you as a group. And, of course, we got to realize, well, if they're there, they're dealing with the same thing, too.
Right.
So, you know, some people decide that they are going to tell their spouses. Some people decide they're not.
Mm-hmm.
I really try not to put a judgment on that.
Right.
But we have to look at what is the outcome of not telling if you're not going to be protected or protect the one that you love that you're with.
Okay, we're going to take another break here and come back for our final segment with Greg Carlson and Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Tell the Truth Faster. This is our final segment of the evening. Our topic tonight's been bisexuality, and my guest has been Greg Carlson, who has once again shown a great deal of wisdom and knowledge about this topic, and I want to thank you for being on the show tonight, Greg.
Thanks, Stuart.
And any closing thoughts you may have and any information you want to impart?
Well, just real quickly, I mean, if there's anybody out there that is identifying with this and just going, yeah, that's me, to just find in your community where there is support, because I think that's where you have to start. You do not have to be alone, and you don't have to feel that you're the only one out there. The second thing is there are a couple conferences coming up in August, on August 22nd to 24th in San Diego. There's the North American Bisexual Conference. You can find that by going to www.bisexual.org/NACB and take that. Also, in October, we're going to have a conference in Arizona. So that'll be coming up on the website. If you get a hold of binet.org, you can find that information too. So those are some closing spots that I have, but just to reiterate that you don't have to be alone.
Great. I really want to thank you again, Greg, and I'll look forward to having you on the show again to continue this conversation.
Wonderful.
And for my listeners, just a few closing thoughts. First of all, if you want to get in touch with Greg, you can go to the website for the show, tellthetruthfaster.com. And within a couple of weeks, this show, along with all the other shows I've done over the last year and a half, are all archived on that site, and you can listen or send someone who wasn't listening that if you want them to hear the show, they'll be able to listen on that site. Everything's free on there, and you can email me or email Greg through me or get his phone number off the site within the next couple of days. It'll all be up there. And some closing thoughts, too, on this topic and the whole issue of telling the truth faster. You know, we talk a lot about the pain and suffering that someone who is bisexual may be going through and stuff, but there are a lot of people who are bisexual that take a lot of joy in their self-identity and their expression of who they are as sexual beings. And I don't want to minimize that, but I thought it was important tonight to really discuss and really bring home and give people something to identify who are struggling with this issue. And maybe the family members, the spouse, boyfriends or girlfriends or kids or parents of people who are bisexual, maybe listening to the show may help you on your own path of understanding and forgiving whatever dynamics have been going on between you and your loved one. And to me, like Greg was talking about, that husband who came out about being bisexual to his wife, and they remembered that they were actually best friends and are finding a way to maintain their relationship, their love, their intimacy, and anything is possible. No matter what you've always thought about yourself in terms of ideas about relationships, sexuality, and its expression, start with your heart. Start with how you feel towards this loved one and find a way to maintain that heart connection. And sometimes because of where you are in your own life, then maybe it does mean that the relationship has to change form in the sense of not being together anymore. But it doesn't mean it has to be done with anger and retaliation and a lifetime of hurt feelings. There's always room for forgiveness, and there's always a road to get there. And sometimes you may need some help in doing it. Sometimes some couples counseling, even, you know, especially during a situation like this. I really encourage you to, if you've listened to the show, to really try and get that this is a struggle that's going on within an individual and not something that they are doing to you maliciously in any sense of the word. For the most part, that's the case.
Right.
So I really encourage not just the person who may be struggling with their own identity as bisexual or gay or lesbian or heterosexual. You know, we've been raised in a society where it's difficult to talk about sex, period.
Mm-hmm.
So this is adds to that dimension. I mean, those of you who are heterosexual know how difficult it is to discuss sexual issues with someone you're in a relationship with, so you can imagine the additional level of difficulty that exists for someone who's bisexual, gay, or lesbian. So keep your minds open, your hearts open, and tell the truth faster. And this is Stuart Altshuler, thanking Greg Carlson again, and inviting all of you who are listening to tell your friends about the show and to tune in next week. Thank you for listening, and have a good night.